welcome to Season 4, Episode 11 of the Potter Discussion. I'm your host, Oscar, and here on the Potter Discussion, we discuss some of Harry Potter's deepest and darkest theories, tidbits, and little Easter eggs you might have missed, and you probably did. In today's episode, I am going to be talking about a theory that will explain a question that I have had forever. What are the true limits of the animagus? And there are so many different ways to say animagus, 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 animagus. So I'm just going to say animagi, animagus. That's just how I kind of learned it. So getting that out of the way. But this theory, I'm going to be discussing how many things can the animagus be. We don't really get presented with parameters or limits at all, but we don't really see many animagus at all. So it's a really confusing theory, and I'm just going to try to power through, and we will get to the bottom of this mystery, as we always do. So let's do it. What are the true limits of the animagus? I said it again. Okay. Being an animagus is no easy task. There have only been 7 animagi in the past 100 years. However, there are several unregistered animagi we can add to the list. Being able to turn into an animagus at will seemed to be a really cool ability. But that brings up the question, what are the true limits of animagi? There could be many possible answers. What makes this theory such a confusing theory is we don't have very much information on the true nature of animagus. We haven't seen many throughout the books and movies. To start, we should educate ourselves a bit. So how do you actually become an animagus? Let me tell you. It is a very strenuous process. According to Pottermore, I will put a link to the article in the show notes, the process is as follows. Step 1. Do your homework. In Transfiguration and Potions, at least. Becoming an animagus requires a witch or wizard to be skilled in both these areas in order to stand a chance of achieving such a complete transformation. Step 2. Carry a single Drandrake leaf in your mouth for an entire month. From full moon to full moon, to be precise. Yes, we're serious. If you swallow the leaf or remove it from your mouth at any point, you have to start the whole thing over again. No one likes to see that happen. You then have to find a small crystal phial that receives the pure rays of the moon. Put your saliva-filled leaf inside, then add one of your own hairs. Step 3. Add a silver teaspoon of dew from a place that neither sunlight nor human feet have touched for a full 7 days. And if that wasn't hard enough, you then have to add the chrysalis of a death's head hawk moth to the crystal phial as well. Then, put this mixture into a quiet and dark place and leave it alone until the next electrical storm. And really leave it alone. Don't even think about looking at it. Step 4. While waiting for the storm, you must place your wand tip over your heart every sundown and sunset and speak the following incantation. Amato, animo, animato, animagus. If you keep repeating your incantation, there will come a time when, with the touch of the wand tip to the heart, a second heartbeat may be sensed. Don't change anything. Keep going. Keep waiting for that storm. Step 5. As soon as lightning appears in the sky, go to the place where you've hidden your crystal phial. At last, if you've done everything right, then you will find a mouthful of blood-red potion inside it. Then move somewhere where you aren't going to alarm anyone or place yourself in danger during a transformation. An animagus transformation party is definitely a bad idea. Step 6. Place your wand tip against your heart and speak the incantation Amato, Animo, Animato, Animagus, and drink the potion. You will then feel a fiery pain, lucky you, and an intense double heartbeat. Step 7. the shape of the creature into which you will shortly transform will pop into your mind. The instructions will warn. You must show no fear. It is too late now to escape the change you have willed. Yikes. Step 8. When your transformation is complete, you are advised to pick up your wand and hide it somewhere safe, so you can find it post-transformation. To return to human form, visualize your human self as clearly as you can. Don't worry if you don't change back immediately. With practice, you will be able to slip in and out of your animal form at will, simply by visualizing the creature. Once you're an advanced animagus, you should be able to transform without your wand. Alright, there you have it. So, from what I saw in that description, being an animagus is very hard. So, now on the million-dollar question. I think that the answer is yes. Here's why. The person trying to complete the change actually isn't choosing the animal. It pops into their head right when they are transforming, like a Patronus. And that's the answer. An animagus can't be literally anything, like a book or a filing cabinet, but any living thing. Animals, magical creatures, and even plants. Boom. There you have it. And personally, I think this would be such an interesting storyline for if one of the students at Hogwarts or Ilvermorny transformed, and then their Patronus, well, like the animal that popped into their head was like a tree, and they were just like, they could turn into a tree. Congratulations, you are a tree. And that'd be so funny and interesting to see, like, how they lived their life with this, like, year-long process of waiting for an electrical storm, you know, carrying a leaf in your mouth for a month. I don't get it. Like, how? This is so mind-boggling. Why would you spend that much time to go through that grueling and painful process just to turn it to a tree? And now I finally understood with this theory, because you don't get to choose which animal you become. You are given that animal by yourself in the form that it would be presented to you. So, like a Patronus, that's kind of how we could guess a person's animagus form. I said, like, animagus a ton, so that's, like, I'm sure you know what I mean. And I'm trying to think if we've ever seen Professor McGonagall's Patronus. I think we have. Oh, and it was a cat. Actually, you know what? I'm going to check. I'll be right back. It was a cat. So, yeah, all these pieces are fitting into place like theory should. So, I guess it's true that if a person casts a Patronus, that will very likely be their animagus form. And another point I wanted to highlight is about Neville. And if a person could fail being an animagus, I think that it's possible because it is extremely hard. So if they were to not complete or follow the steps appropriately, that would be it. They would not have a Patronus form. And Neville is a non-corporeal, which means that he doesn't have a Patronus that takes an animal form. He either, like, just literally doesn't have one, or he can't. And, I mean, knowing Neville, I don't think he can. So, unfortunately, that might mean that Neville, among others who don't have the skill level, might not be able to cast a Patronus at all. Because that's just how they are. So, like, some people can't run a mile, but some people can. Like, that's kind of how it works. It's just, you know, what you're given is what you work with. And most people have enough ability or have friends, like Peter Pettigrew. He had the best students in the school helping him with the transformation, so it wasn't like he was alone. And that's why Peter Pettigrew managed to turn into a rat at the end of his transformation. And that's why Sirius and James were able to do it as well, because they were extremely skilled, and they probably had the same Patronus form. And now, even thinking about Harry, and Harry's Patronus is a stag, does that mean that his animagus form, animagus form, would be a stag? I mean, it makes sense if Prongs, James turned into a stag as his animagus, that might mean that his Patronus is that too. So, I mean, it might be passed down, and James and Harry, oh my gosh, everyone's saying how similar James and Harry Potter are. And this is just another pebble on the pile to add to all those things that people were saying about them, because their Patronuses are the same, and their animagus forms would be the same too if they both had that opportunity. Another point I wanted to capitalize on is the Patronus aspect of it. And I know we've been talking about that a lot, but I have been thinking about how a person's Patronus could be a plant. And it is highly, highly unlikely. We don't have to do any research. Like, a plant Patronus, that's completely, it's like, unique and rare. But it's possible. And here is why. We've seen, so, I think I'm just thinking about Aberforth, and he is Dumbledore's brother, and in the 7th book, he says, like, the order's done, Voldemort's won. And he casts a Patronus, he comes, and it's like this big scene, and we see him, and it isn't an animal, it isn't corporeal, it's just these waves that are being blasted out of his wand, and forgive me if I didn't see the goat, but he was casting the waves, and those just explosions of Patronus energy that were being cast out of his wand were what were defending against the swarm of Dementors that was coming their way. And, I mean, you don't need, like, a ram to, or a goat to make wave, those Patronus energy waves. And a tree could do the same thing. Like, I don't know, I'm looking at a tree right now. You could do a tree. My gosh, I'm so weird. Having a tree in a Patronus situation wouldn't really degrade from the power, because a really, really powerful Patronus, if you cast that spell, it would just be the waves of energy coming off of the Patronus. So even if the tree or plant wasn't there, the waves of power still would be, and it would still cast a suitable Patronus, which is why this theory works. Having a Patronus doesn't mean casting an animal. Having a Patronus means defending against Dementors and creating things of happiness. Like, if you, like, find happiness in a tree, you do you. Like, whatever, you do you. And, I don't know, maybe your Patronus is a plant. And it's just the power that comes off of the Patronus that matters. It isn't summoning, like, something that's just physically powerful. And something that's made up of the energy that does the job. Having something like that is why it's so effective and hard to create. You could summon anything. You could summon a real ram and have it charge the Dementors, but that wouldn't do anything. Because it wasn't the same energy. It would be the tree or the animal or the magical animal energy, and that's what would cause the Dementor to flee, because it is the energy. If you take away anything, take away the it is the energy from this episode. It is the energy. And that's just another cool layer. We haven't seen many Patronuses. Just a basic list. We know of a couple, but we've only seen, like, some members of Dumbledore's army. Of course, Harry, Ron, Hermione, Aberforth. So, the list is pretty small, and out of that small sample size, I don't think it's suitable to, like, no one in that group had plans, as far as we know, rather. And I think from that small sample size of people, because they didn't have any plans, that doesn't mean that we should just assume that plans is completely off the table. And just because, say, no one in the world has a plant Patronus, that still means that there's, like, trillions of wizards born that could have that plant Patronus. And let me tell you, there are some really cool plants that could be make really good Patronuses, like the Venus flytrap, maybe a really big tree, maybe even a rock. I mean, I don't know. If your personality is like a rock, don't think you would be going to Hogwarts. But it's just the fact that it's possible, and that's what matters. That's why the theory works, because it could happen. Not because it's in effect, but because it could. I think that's a very poetic end to this theory. If you have any questions, comments, or theories that you would like to hear on the podcast, you can definitely send me an email. My email is thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. That is thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. If you could just scroll down and tap that 5 stars or even write a review, that could help me out more than you could ever know. And in that 0.3 seconds, you can make my day. Also, make sure to subscribe so you never miss another episode of this awesome content that you know and love. And if you want my ultimate guide to a perfect Harry Potter marathon, where I give you my 2 favorite Easter eggs from every movie to make your watching experience just a little bit better, and be joined under the funnel of monthly newsletters giving you insight on the 2 best theories of that month, click the first link in the show notes below. All you have to do is enter your first name and email, and you are in. As always, use this information to your advantage, and I'll see you later.